We're off. My name's Toby. I'm an alcoholic. Tonight, it's kind of interesting. We had someone scheduled to speak, and they couldn't make it. They had a prior engagement or something that came up that they couldn't come here. And she was kind enough to go ahead and find her own replacement. I've spoken to him on the phone, and I've had a little chance to speak to him outside. I'm looking forward to hearing his story so I can learn more about one of our fellow alcoholics. And with that, from 3333, Tom C., correct?
No, Tom Saucy.
Tom Saucy.
That's all right.
All right.
Yay. Hello there, everyone. How y'all doing? All right. Yeah, I'm Tom Saucy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
and I want to thank Toby for giving me a call the other day and confirming the visit with you tonight. Laura McKenzie is a good friend of mine, and I've known Laura for many years. I'll say many years, probably what, 7 years, or going on 8 years. And she's just a great person, and she's a very good friend of mine. And she asked me to do this, and I thanked her for asking me. I feel honored that I can be at a meeting of alcoholics, and I never say no to AA. AA has saved my life, and I hope that somebody out there can hear what I'm going to say tonight, because I believe that there is an awesomely powerful God that can restore our lives. God certainly has restored my life, and it's all through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and getting to that point where life had become impossible, and I had crossed over to the region which there was no return through human aid. My story kind of goes what it used to be like, what happened, what it was like then, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. I took my first drink when I was 15 years old, and I never quit. I didn't stop. I kept going. And I had a lot of fun drinking. I had a lot of good times in high school. I got in a rock and roll band in high school. At the end of the ninth grade, five of us got together, and we formed a group. This was back in 1964, and the Beatles had just hit the States, and we were into that. And so none of us knew how to play guitars we didn't know anything about music. But we joined together and made a lot of noise early, but then we kept practicing, and we kept working at it, and we were self-taught, and we had a sound, we had some harmony, and we learned how to play music. And all through our high school years, a lot of drinking going on, a lot of fun drinking. Our bass player had a cousin who was going to the University of Florida at the time, and we went up and auditioned for his fraternity, and they liked us. And every year from the 10th grade through our senior year, during football season, we go up and play for the fraternities, and we became well known up there and had a lot of fun. And it's true what you hear about fraternity houses and fraternity parties. It was wild and crazy, and the college girls were awesome, and we just had a wonderful time. The beer and the booze kept going, and we became a good drink. I became a good drinker. I could really, really get it in just right, usually going over the line a lot. No drugs, no pot. We're just big drinkers. And I was born and raised right here in Tampa. My father was an attorney. My mother was a housewife. I was the youngest of four. And there was always enough love to go around. So I cannot blame my disease on my upbringing. None of us were ever favored over the other. I never saw my father drunk. I never saw my mother drunk. I never heard my father say a cuss word to my mother. I never heard my mother say a cuss word to my father or any of the other kids. And we were probably about as normal upbringing as you could get. I became an alcoholic because I drank too damn much liquor. And I let my responsibilities go. My father died when I was about 21 years old. And so as I grew up, I became more accustomed to drinking, and I loved what it did to me. I loved the way it made me feel. I got married at 22, and I married a local girl here in town, and her parents were big drinkers. It was a big drinking family, and I always in a party. Never had to look for a party. We were always right in the middle of one. I began dabbling with other substances, but booze was always my favorite. And so I crossed over the line. We had a little child. After about 5 years of marriage, we had a baby, and I found that I wasn't getting the attention that I wanted, and I began to look elsewhere for attention. And I started staying out late and drinking and coming in drunk all the time and letting my responsibilities go. We separated after 8 years of sobriety of marriage. And her father, too, was an attorney. And they were having meetings whenever I'd go out and stay out late at night. The whole family would come over to our house. And they were having meetings, and I was never invited to these meetings. And they were having meetings about what they were going to do with me. And the time came that I had to move out. And so I moved out, and I felt the loneliness that goes, but I kept drinking to kill that loneliness. I always wanted to be at the party. And one night I was out drunk, and I woke up in a place where I had no idea how I got there. I had no idea who I was with. And I went out in my car, had a big bash all the way down the side of it, and I had no clue how that got there. And something told me that things weren't right. That was in 1980. And my life flashed in front of me, and I saw that I was losing my family. I'd lost my family, and that I better do something about it if I wanted to get her back. So I checked into a dryout, a place up in Statesboro, Georgia, in April of 1980. And I went to this place called Willingway Hospital. And all the medical staff were big members of Alcoholics Anonymous. The owner was a member of AA. He was a doctor. And they did not believe in detoxing people with drugs. You had to shake it off. And once you shook it off, you were going to meetings every day. And I stayed up there because I wanted to get my wife back. That's what I wanted. And I figured if I could get sobered up, that I could get her back. And halfway through the program, I got served divorce papers. And I said, well, that's just not fair. So I went through the program, and I came back to Tampa after moved in with my mother. And thank God for mother, I'll tell you. Mothers will take care of their children, you know. And that was in May of 1980 when I came back, and we're at 2012 now, and she ain't back yet. So I figured she ain't coming back, Toby. But I got sobered up, and I got into AA, and I stayed in AA. And I got a sponsor, and I started working the program, and I stayed sober. I moved to Naples in 82. I moved to Naples and lived there for 11 years. And I was very active in Alcoholics Anonymous in Naples, and I did a lot of work with the jails and the rehab centers up there, and did the did all the steps and took people through the steps. Had a lot of sponsees, and it was just a wonderful, and life became good. Life got good. Business got good. And I came back to Tampa in 93. I was selling insurance. So I was selling life insurance to members of the military at Homestead Air Force Base. I was going back and forth between Naples and Homestead every week, and just having a ball. Hurricane Andrew blew in 92 and blew Homestead off the map. So I moved back up to Tampa. I'd met a girl in Naples, or actually in Homestead, and she moved in with me in Naples. And I moved back here in 93, and everything was wonderful for about a year and a half. And she became drunk. She got drunk. And I lived in that. So anybody who's been in that situation before, I can really feel for you. It's a tough position to be in when the one you love is just self-destructing themselves. It's a helpless situation. So in 02, I picked up a 22-year medallion at Palmacia meeting down in South Tampa. And I had opened up a new business, a seafood business, and was doing very well at it, doing very, very well, actually. And we ended up getting a divorce, and I got busy. I got real busy, and I didn't have time to go to meetings anymore. And after about 6-8 months of no meetings, I got on the marijuana maintenance program. Because, you know, it relaxes you. It gives you that relaxed feeling. You know, you can sleep at night better. You can relax during the day when things get rough. You just roll a joint. But I wasn't drinking. And in 05, I had to go back up to Georgia. Our family had closed on a real estate deal, and I went back up and I picked up a check, a large amount of cash. And I came back to Tampa, and on the way back, I called an old friend of mine. I had no program, by the way. I had no meetings for about 2.5 to 3 years, no meetings at all. And had no program. I had no defense against the drink or the drugs. And I called a friend of mine, and I said, "How much is an ounce of cocaine going for these days?" And he told me. And I said, "Well, I'll take one." And I stopped off at his house on the way in. I picked up a 12-pack of beer and an ounce of Coke and went and did that. And then I went and got another one. And I had not one time did the thought of what I was getting ready to get myself into ever occur to me. And I ended up really in a lot of trouble. But it was gradual. The big book says gradually things got worse, and unfortunate things began happening to me. I got late on bills. My driver's license began to get suspended regularly, and then I'd get it redone, and then it'd go away, and I wouldn't pay this, and next thing you know, the bill collectors are coming around. The lights are getting turned off of my seafood market. Electricity, the phone bills were getting shut down, and always scrambling around. But everything was cool. I'll get through it. And after about 10 months of this, I ended up after about 90 days of doing the powder and drinking, I began to do rock. I started smoking crack. And I got hooked on that real bad, and ended up, oh God knows, that the jails come, the cops always seem to show up at the wrong time. I I tried to stop doing that and drink beer, and then I drink beer and do both, and it was just back and forth and back and forth. And the next thing I know, I'm getting arrested and going to jail. Just walking down the street one day, I was down on Gandy Boulevard, just minding my own business, walking down the street, and a cop pulls up behind me on the sidewalk in front of the cash and carry, or not Sweet Bay, down on Manhattan and Gandy. And he just pulls up behind me and says, "Hey, come here." I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Weren't you just involved in that altercation down at KFC?" And I said, "Well, no, sir. I'm just going down here to get a pack of cigarettes." He says, "Let me see your ID." And I showed it to him, and he went and looked at it and found out I had 5 warrants on me. Things like that never happened when I was in AA. And what I want to just mention is that when we get sober and we sober up, the things that happen to us when we're drinking and getting high don't happen when we're sober. The driver's license, oh my God, I'd get stopped. And one time I had a Suburban, and the tag was expired because I didn't have the money to pay for the auto tag, or the insurance actually. But I had to go make a run, see, you know, and I was in a hurry. I had to get something done here. And so I went and got a piece of cardboard, and I wrote on it, "Lost tag." And I went and I put it where the tag is. I said, I see these all over town. You know, everybody does this. And so I put it on my truck, and I'm not out of the place for a block. The next thing I know, there's a cop behind me wanting to see my driver's license, and I didn't have my driver's license because the last cop had taken it away from me. And he says, "Where's your tag?" And I said, "Well, I don't know where it is." And he found out, looking at the computer, that the other cop had taken it away. And so there I go. I'm going back to jail again. And this became a routine procedure. You see, I'd never been to jail before. The first time you get petrified. It was like, wow, this is awful. I don't ever want to come back here. But after about the 4th time, they get you to know you by your first name. "Hey, Tom's back. How you doing, Tom? How's everything going?" And it was a journey to hell. I got evicted from my business. I got evicted from my apartment on Davis Island. I had my truck towed away, and I was on my feet. And I found myself sitting out in front of the Salvation Army with all the guys. I couldn't get a room at the Salvation Army because I didn't have a photo ID. Had no place to go. Had nobody to call. And that's the life that I lived. I was homeless. Had no money. I couldn't get a job. I was going to the county to get help. A voucher for the Salvation Army to live there for a week, and then after a week you got to go to work, and I couldn't get work, and so I started doing day labor because I needed money. I needed money to fuel my habit. And I'd go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning as best I could. I'd get off, and they'd have a paycheck for you the next morning when you got there to go to work. And so I just had to make it through that first day. And I did that for a while. And it was a journey that I pray to God that I never have to take that journey again. And today, my life is just 100% better. Everything's working today. The end of my drinking and drugging occurred on September the 7th. I got arrested for felony possession, and the judge put me in DACO outpatient, and I could not pass a P test, and I kept on and on drinking getting high, and after about a month, I ended up going in there in front of her, and she got tired of seeing the results of my UAs, and she said, "I have enough here to put you in prison for 18 months, or you can go to DACO for 6 months." And so I chose DACO, and when I went there, the second night I was there, something happened to me. My whole life showed up at that moment. I'm sitting on my bunk, and I said a little prayer that we all say. "God, I don't know what's going on, but I'm in trouble, and if you can help me get through this, I'll do whatever you want me to do." And something happened at that point in time in my life. From that day until right now today, I haven't had a desire to drink or take any mood-altering narcotic intoxicants. And I knew that I had left God. God never left me. I left God. And today, I take this program very seriously, because I'm convinced that if I take one beer, one glass of wine, light white wine, or smoke a joint, or do anything that makes me feel any different than the way I feel today, that just in a matter of time, I'll be right back into the same position that I was in, and I don't want to go there today. I have that desire. I have that burning desire to stay sober. Every day is a day where I carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. Every day. I got sponsees today that help me stay sober. Some of them ain't doing too damn good, but they sure help me, and it's a blessing. AA has given me my life back. I stay very active in the program. I don't play with this thing. I do it because it's a gift. Sobriety is a gift for us, and. When you were reading the solution, there's a solution. That's one of the most powerful pages in the Big Book, on page 25. And I read it almost every day, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our entire attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and toward God's universe. The great fact for us, that's the great fact for us. The central fact is that our Creator has entered into our hearts and our lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He's begun to do the things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And I can tell you today that drinking is just one of my problems. It's not a problem today. God takes care of all my problems today. He owns the keys to the whole ranch. My prayer life is very strong today. I believe in fervent, powerful prayer, and I've seen it work in so many ways. I've seen people get healed from prayer. I've seen miraculous things happen. And it's just a matter of making that connection, and I made my connection through the steps. When I saw step one, when I was at DACO, I started reading the step. Our lives had become unmanageable. Unmanageable was a compliment to my life when I got here. It was a compliment. My life was impossible. Life had become impossible. And I'll make that connection in step two with the power that can restore me to sanity. Step three, I make that decision to turn my will over to God, my life over, my thoughts and my actions over to God. And I commenced to do a four-step and a fifth step and a six and seven. And each step that I took brought me closer to God. And step eight and nine. And in step 10, it says, we're now at step 10 where we continue to take a personal inventory and write any new mistakes as we go along. So steps 1 through 9 cleans up the wreckage of the past. And step 10, 11, and 12 is how I maintain my sobriety today. By taking a personal inventory every day. Have I hurt anybody? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself that I need to discuss with someone at once? If I have, I need to talk to somebody about it. I need to talk to my sponsor about it. I told my sponsor the night before I came over, I said, do I need to wear a coat and tie? What's up with that? He says, yeah, you do. So you can let people see that you're not, that you got a job and you're not out panhandling for money anymore. Okay. So yeah, I do what he tells me to do. I sure do. And he's got about 30, 35 years of sobriety. And I've known this guy for a long, long time, back when I first came in. And we've been friends for all those years. And he tells me, it's hard to be objective when you're engaging in self-deception. So get a sponsor and let him see through all the crap, which is what he does. And he never agrees with anything that I tell him. Always in disagreement. I heard a guy say one time, if you got a sponsor who agrees with everything you say, you better get a new one because he's as crazy as you are. And that's about the truth right there. AA is not logical. This thing ain't logical. It can't be explained. I can't explain. I can sit up here and explain to you what happened in a spiritual sense. But when it happens, you know that it happens. God puts people in our lives. God speaks through people. In meetings. I go to meetings and I can feel the presence of God in AA meetings. And that's what keeps me sober today. Working with others. Seeking through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. And I'll tell you what, he answers all our prayers. He really does. Sometimes we don't get what we want, but we get what we need. And that's it says in the book, it says, when I get what I need, invariably I find is exactly what I wanted all along. And that's how it works. I got a driver's license today. Can you believe that? I got a driver's license today. I got a car to drive. Got a job. I got people who like for me to be there. I smell good today. I didn't used to smell like this. I've got a job. My boss told me the other day, he said, you know, I wish I had 10 like you. And 5 years ago, they didn't want me anywhere. They didn't want me around. They were looking for ways to get rid of me. And it's a good feeling, all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. AA gives us our life back, and all we have to do is follow a few simple rules, and know that God is present at all times. He provides what we need if we keep Him close to us and perform His work well. Sometimes you don't even have to perform His work well; just perform it to the best of your ability. And carry the message. Go see the people that are suffering. Go see the newcomers. Visit with the newcomers. They'll keep you sober. I every Monday night, a buddy of mine and I go out to DACO, to the alumni group. There's not too many of us left out there who have stayed sober. Just about everybody who circled out of DACO with me, they're all out in the streets. They're all back. A couple of them are dead, OD. Alcoholic death's a hell of a way to go. And I just pray to God every day that I can do His work a little bit better every day. And He seems to be able to. He's got all the power. He can direct my path. And I want to close because I know we're getting ready to get out of time. We're going to have I love this part right here. It's like the American Express card. Never leave home without it. In Bill's story, I love this part, and this is the last paragraph, a couple of paragraphs. It says, an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity. But just underneath, there is a deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friends, a simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. And that's, I can identify with all of that. The power of Alcoholics Anonymous, being brought back to life. Is what this thing's all about. Through developing and maintaining a relationship with God. And I want to thank you all for letting me be here tonight. I love every one of you.
Thank you, sir.